Blog Talk Radio.
Live to another edition of Carson's Corner, the MMA show. It's been a long time since we've done an MMA show, and we're back in a huge way here tonight with two huge guests. 347-326-9749 is the number if you want to be a part of the program. That is 347-326-9749. We also have the chat room open for you as well. Our first guest, you all know who he is Sam Hoger. He really needs no introduction to any fan of mixed martial arts. He's a first-generation Ultimate Fighter show star, and he's a talented and intelligent individual. He has 2 degrees from LSU in political science. Wait a minute, Donnie, is that right? Hey, Sam is way into politics, and so am I, so maybe we can get into a bit of that later on in the show. So where was I? Sam is with us here on Carson's Corner. We're happy to have him back on the show. It's been about 3 or 4 years since we had, maybe even longer than that, probably back in 2009. Sam, welcome to Carson's Corner. Sam, can you hear me? Sam? Hello? Sam, can you hear me? Hello? I can hear somebody on the line. Hello? Let's try this again. Sam, can you hear me? Sam?
Hello?
Hello? Hey, Sam, can you hear me? Let's try this again. Hold on. Sam, can you hear me? Sam?
Do you think this is Sam, by any chance?
Hey, yeah, can you hear me, Sam?
If you can hear me, say three.
Three.
Okay, yeah, this isn't Sam.
Is this Pete Moran?
No, this is a guy that's going to make Pete Moran look like an idiot.
Mike Swick.
So, no, not Mike Swick. But what he's doing, Mike Swick, is ridiculous. So I just wanted ask him a few questions whenever it's my turn.
Yes, absolutely. We're going to have Sam Hoger on in he should be calling in any second now. And this is weird because the area code that you're calling from is from Texas, and I figured it was Sam that was on the phone. But, yeah, Pete Moran is going to be on in the second hour, and we have a lot to talk about, and we'll be happy to take your phone call if you want to hang on or if you want to call back.
Yeah, what time does he come on?
9 o'clock, about a little less than an hour from now.
All right, sounds good.
Thanks a lot, brother.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, yeah, we're still waiting for Sam Hoger. That was very, very odd. I apologize for that. I figured that was Sam because that was from a Texas area code, but we're trying to get Sam on the program. And let me tell you something. We had Sam on about 4 or 5 years, and you know, this is he was part of the Ultimate Fighter season one, lost to Forrest Griffin, I believe in the semifinals, and of course Forrest and Stefan went on to have that that real great matchup that really put the UFC on the map. And now word is that Dana White is going to be inducting the guys from the first season of The Ultimate Fighter. And he's actually going to be inducting them into the Hall of Fame. And wanted to find out what was going on with that. And there's just a lot to talk about. I mean, to be honest with you, I haven't followed The Ultimate Fighter all that much. There's just so many seasons. I just got so much going on in my life. But certainly, the show has changed. I would argue the caliber of athlete has changed. I mean, you know, really, if you look at the first season of The Ultimate Fighter, these individuals, almost all of these individuals, Mike Swick, as a matter of fact, was on the first season of The Ultimate Fighter. And all of these guys were just really, really good, great UFC fighters. And, you know, now we're getting word that someone like Colton Smith is being cut from the UFC roster, although I don't know if that's confirmed. But I'm not sure that The Ultimate Fighter can really breed contenders, as was the case in the earlier Ultimate Fighters. And can you believe it's been almost 10 years? Almost 10 years. The Ultimate Fighter started in 2005. It's just, wow, how time goes. And this show actually started in 2006. Can you believe that? You know, we started in 2006. We've been going strong. And it just, the sport has changed so much. It really has. Now, today you've got Bellator on. And I obviously I'm not going to be able to watch Bellator because I'm broadcasting them live on the air with you here, but you don't really have too many interesting fights. I mean, one of the fights that people are talking about is Phil Baroni versus Carl Parisian, and this is under Scott Coker now. Scott Coker, who's taken over the reins of Bellator, and you know, not too anxious to see Phil Baroni fight, I'll be honest with you. I remember years ago when we had Joe Riggs on this program, when Joe Riggs fought Phil Baroni in Strikeforce and ultimately went on to beat Phil Baroni. I'm not sure if he decisioned Phil Baroni or if he TKO'd him, one or the other. And this was back in like 2009. And I made the comment that maybe I shouldn't have, you know me, I'm just a magnet for controversy. I made the comment that Phil Baroni sounds like he's punch drunk. And Joe Riggs kind of agreed with me, and Phil, I guess, heard it. And Eddie Goldman was on a press conference with Phil, and Eddie was asking Phil a question about wrestling, about, you know, what it's like to, you know, fight in an arena where, you know, in a state where there was a huge wrestling background and just a you know, a vibrant wrestling community. And Eddie, or Phil mistook Eddie for me, and Phil started bashing Eddie on the press conference. And Eddie's like, no, you're talking about Bob Carson. That's, you know, I'm Eddie Goldman. It was just really, really funny. But, you know, Phil is down. I think Phil is down to 155 now. I saw pictures of him at 155. And, you know, I'm just, you know, nothing against Phil Baroni, nothing against Carl Parisian either. I'm just not interested in seeing this fight. However, there's a couple guys that are fighting. There's a Liam McGarry who's fighting. And Liam McGarry, I actually had an opportunity to interview Liam McGarry a couple of years, actually 2011, at the Ring of Combat, where he just obliterated his opponent. He was training. I'm not sure if he was training with, I think he was training with Pellegrino at the time in Belmar. And this is a undefeated fighter. And this is a guy, he's a young guy, he's maybe 31, 32 years old. He's about 6'6", and this guy could potentially, you know, become a UFC fighter because he's fighting in a way that really excites people. You know, people want to see the knockout. And he hasn't fought too many good guys, and probably the best guy that he's fought is Anton Talamantis. Anton Talamantis was a Division I wrestler. I believe he wrestled for Ohio State, if I'm not mistaken. But Anton Talamantis, he's an okay fighter, but he beat Ed Truck Gordon, who recently won the Ultimate Fighter. Okay, Ed Truck Gordon. And maybe a guy like Ed Truck Gordon will make me eat my words when it comes to the lack of contendership within the Ultimate Fighter shows, you know, the Ultimate Fighter fighters. I don't know, you know, possibly he's a big, strong guy. He trains out of Cerro Longo, and those guys are producing great fighters, as we know. So it's just really, really interesting. But Liam McGarry is a guy that I would look out for. And also on this Bellator card, you've got Kelly Knudsen, who is a fighter out of American Top Team. He's got a solid grappling background. I think he may have one or two losses on his record, one of which was to Francis Carmont via armbar. But Kelly is another exciting fighter, young guy, very, very powerful fighter, and he's someone to look out for, too. So those are really the two fights, the two fighters that I'm looking forward to monitoring their career as they go forward. What's going to happen with them? And what's going to happen with Bellator as a whole? We're trying to get Sam Hoger here on Carson's Corner. We have a whole bunch of questions to ask him, and it was weird because we just confirmed with him that he's going to be on the program. Maybe he's running a little late. I don't know, but we're trying to text him, and we're trying to get him to call the show because we've got a lot to talk about. Now, in the second hour, you heard about this with our caller in the beginning. We're going to be interviewing a man named Pete Moran, and this is a very, very controversial interview, and I want to kind of read a disclaimer before we get into the interview because, you know, whenever you have someone who is alleging something on the part of a business partner or whatnot, you have to be as neutral as possible. And, you know, there are people that even that would criticize us for having him on the program. Well, our response to that would be, you know, this is a forum for anyone that feels that they've been shut out by the underground forum and you know, have a side to tell. And in the past, when we've had individuals that have made allegations against another fighter or somebody within the martial arts community, we've always agreed to have that person back on the show. A good example of this is when we had Zane Frazier on the program. Zane, of course, is, you know, intertwined with Frank Dukes, and you know, he was making all sorts of claims about Frank, and Frank responded, and that's how I actually became friends with Frank Dukes, was right after that Zane Frazier interview. And sure enough, we had Frank on the show, then we had Zane. I mean, so we're open to all sides of the discussion here, but I don't know how we got in touch with Pete. I think it was through Twitter, and he was making some posts on the underground forum, making some allegations against Mike Swick, and we somehow got in touch with him, and we agreed to put him on the program. We're going to have that at 9 o'clock or so. We're going to get through that, and so hopefully it'll be worth your while. We have some very, very objective, neutral questions to ask him, and we're happy to get anybody's response. We're happy to take calls, and we're happy to even have Mike Swick on if he wants to come on the program. Mike Swick is, from what I could tell, has a very, very good reputation in the sport of MMA. I don't know if this is Sam Hoger or if this is another individual. You're on the air. Hello? Hello?
Can you hear me?
Hello? Yeah. Yes, this is not Sam, right?
Nope, still the same guy that just wants to make fun of Pete.
All right, good. I'm going to leave you on hold because we're still waiting for Sam Hoger. I was just talking about Pete Moran and our interview with him in the second hour. So I'm just going to leave you on hold. I'll remember you're an 832 area code, so I don't keep on referring to you as Sam. Thanks a lot, though.
Thanks, Bob.
I'll talk to you. All right, so that was someone looking to make fun of Pete Moran. Should be interesting. We'll have him on the program. Pete is scheduled to call in, I believe, from Australia. And in the meantime, we are trying to get a hold. We're trying to get in touch with Sam Hoger. We got the Ultimate Fight Night coming up tomorrow. And from my understanding, Matt Brown missed weight. Matt Brown came in at a pound and a half over. And this is kind of disappointing. In my opinion, it seems like they're kind of trying to push Matt Brown. Not saying he's not a very good fighter. I mean, he's got a tremendous story. He's a guy that you root for. You know, recently in an interview, he said that I'm effing good at what I do. And, you know, people can certainly cheer for a guy like Matt Brown. And there's no question that the Matt Brown-Robbie Lawler fight is going to be one where people are already talking about this being the fight of the year, and it certainly has the potential to be that. I don't think it's going to be really that competitive. I'll be honest with you. I mean, I don't think that Matt Brown is going to have the knockout power to knock out Robbie Lawler. I mean, you look at Robbie Lawler's last fight, a total destruction of Jake Ellenberger. And prior to that, there were a lot of people that thought that he beat Johnny Hendricks. You know, I mean, he looked like he was close to knocking out Johnny Hendricks in the latter portion of that fight. And, you look at Matt Brown's last fight. He looked very good against, Eric Silva. But I don't think that Eric Silva, with all due respect to him, is the caliber of opponent as Johnny Hendricks or a Jake Ellenberger. Okay, I just don't. So, you know, in that sense, it looks like it could be a competitive fight, but I'd have to say that Robbie Lawler is certainly the favorite to win this fight. And then, you know, comes the question, what happens when Robbie Lawler does win this fight? Are they going to have him have a rematch with Rory McDonald? By the way, I'm not a fan of Rory McDonald's. It's nothing done. I just don't know what it is. It's something about his personality that rubs me the wrong way. But nonetheless, he looked great against Tyron Woodley, and I was really discounting Rory in his fight versus Tyron Woodley. I'm like, you know what, Rory is Tyron Woodley is going to obliterate Rory. He's going to throw him around in there. But no, it looked like it almost looked like a mismatch, or certainly a one side of the fair against Rory. And I don't know if Dana White promised Rory McDonald a title fight after he beat Tyron Woodley. I really don't know, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens in this division, because this is a stacked division. You know, you've got Hector Lombard just absolutely obliterating Jake Shields. Hector Lombard looks like just a huge, huge fighter, an animal at 170. You've got Robbie Lawler, of course, who's right up there. Rory McDonald. It just goes on and on and on. And you know, this is really a very competitive division, which I'm excited to see any meaningful fight in the welterweight division. I really am. And then also on this card, on the Ultimate Fight Night, you've got Anthony Rumble Johnson versus Little Nog. Now, Anthony Rumble Johnson, who came into the Ultimate Fighter or Ultimate Fighting Championship after fighting in the World Series of Fighting, and, you know, he decisioned Andre Arlovsky, but broke his jaw and knocked out his teeth. I remember that fight. And Anthony Johnson has had weight issues, but now supposedly he's really, really on track. He looked great against Phil Davis, okay? And this is a guy who could potentially add to that division. I think he'd have to be the favorite against Little Nog. But you know what? I mean, who knows? You know, Little Nog's got a lot of experience, and you know, he's a very, very good boxer, good jiu-jitsu guy. I would just have to say that, you know, Anthony Rumble Johnson would be the favorite in this fight. And then if he wins, if Anthony Rumble Johnson wins, as I anticipate he will, then what happens? You know, then who does he fight in this division? You know, because you've got Daniel Cormier versus John Jones. I mean, it's just a lot of great matchups in this division, which I think is really a more talented division than the heavyweight division. I really do. I think there's more potential matchups in the light heavyweight division than there are in the heavyweight division. In fact, I was listening to Sirius XM Fight Club today, and they were talking about how, you know, years ago, although you do have more skilled heavyweight fighters than you did going back, you know, 5-10 years ago with Brock Lesnar and Shane Carwin. Now you've got guys that are, you know, 230, 240, that are highly skilled fighters and move across the cage very well, and they're well with under the heavyweight limit of 265, because there's some talk of the UFC adding a super heavyweight division. And so, you know, I mean, I don't think that really anybody wants to see a super heavyweight division. I don't know that there are too many fighters that would even, you know, qualify for that. How many super heavyweight fighters are there out there, you know, that really cut to 265? This may be Sam Holger. Let's see if this is him. Sam, is that you? Hello? Hello? All right, yeah. I don't know. We got another caller. Looks like a Skype caller. All ones we're going to try to go. This may be Pete Moran. If so, I'll take him early, because there's just we were supposed to have Sam Holger at the top of the hour, and I don't know who this is. Let's try to reconnect. Hello? Yes, hello. Who's this? Hello? Is this Sam? Pete? All right. Well, we'll try to check back with that person. We got another call. Let's see who this is here. Is this Sam?
Hello, this is Sam Holger. How are you guys doing?
Hey, brother. How are you? Good to see you. How in the world are you?
Man, I'm doing really well, actually. Well, today has been a little bit of a roller coaster, but overall I've been doing really, really well.
Yeah, it's great to get you on the show, Sam. And we had you on the show way back a few years ago, but my unpaid and slightly slow intern, Donnie, thought it might be a good idea to have you back on the show with your reemergence as one of the two best bodyguards with an MMA background, and I agreed, which means that this is the second time that we've seen eye to eye on something. The big news, Sam, and I was talking about this earlier in the show, is that the word from Dana White is that you guys from the first season of The Ultimate Fighter are going to be inducted into the UFC Hall of Fame. Have you gotten any further word on that from anyone at Zuffa?
Well, I'm not allowed to speak on, you know, in reference to anything like that, but I can tell you right now, I'll put it this way. When Dana White, one of the things I learned about Dana White on the set, which most people fail to understand about him, is that Dana White is really not a mean, bad guy.
Right.
The thing about Dana White, though, is when he says something, it's like cardinal law. I mean, without a shadow of a doubt, when he says something, not only does he mean it, not only does he believe it, but it happens. I mean, so if Dana said the sun isn't coming up tomorrow, I'd be kind of worried.
How would you feel about going into the Hall of Fame?
I mean, it would be a great honor to go ahead and see that the work that, you know, me and the other guys have done, you know, get substantiated in that kind of a fashion, you know? Like me and Stephen Bonner and Forrest and Jason Thacker and everybody, because all those elements that came together so beautifully enabled the sport to become what it is today. Without us, mixed martial arts, as we know it, on the level that we know it, would not exist. We are the perennial reason for the perennial. We are the reason that the UFC and the sport was able to cross the threshold into becoming what it was. And, you know, it was amazing. It's an honor.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Sam. And some of you guys really helped make that first season a somewhat compelling show, and you guys are to be commended for that. I mean, your role. Everyone remembers you and what you were doing on the show in that first season. And here we are almost a decade out from The Ultimate Fighter. So what are some of your memories from way back then?
I remember when I was on the show, one of the things that, you know, I really enjoyed was that they were able to bring us any kind of food we want. And around that time, you know, the Atkins diet was pretty was catching a lot of steam. So a lot of the guys thought I wasn't taking the show seriously at the time because I would eat these big, thick steaks every single day, and they would become very contemptful about, like, you're not going to make weight, and you're going to be this, that, and the other. And I'd keep telling them, it's Atkins, baby. I remember the day I stepped on the scale, they all looked at each other almost in shock and awe at the fact that when I stepped on the scale, I was at or right underweight, you know? And there was an element of gamesmanship there that felt really nice because my opponent, which at the time, if you remember on the first season, was between Forrest Griffin and Bobby Southworth. My opponent at the time, you know, didn't know whether or not I was going to make weight. They were hoping they would just get a bye. But, you know, it ended up being Forrest. I made weight, and it was great. Another good memory that I had was, you know, playing chess with all the guys and, you know, being the best chess player in the house and really kind of, like, you know, teaching Mike Swick and how to play and what to do and how to be, you know, skillful in executing his moves and planning what he's going to do. I mean, because Mike's a really smart guy. He's doing really well right now. And then, what else? Stephen Bonner, spending time with him. And at that time, he was thinking about becoming, like, a physical therapist. And he was, you know, he was telling me about, like, all the nuances of, like, caring for the body and how he was studying to take a variety of tests once he got back in order to get some type of certification. Now, one of the things that really doesn't surprise me, though, is that, you know, some of the roads that some of the people went down, you know, like, for example, Chris Leben, I cannot believe that he made all that money and did not end up paying taxes, you know, because even with his crazy behavior on the show, which a lot of it was for the show, I'm really shocked that right now he's caught himself in the hole that he's in trying to get out of, you know, trying to figure out a way to pay his taxes to the IRS, because I saw that article that they had released of him saying that he pushed he would have been a truck driver because he would have had a better he would have been able to make a better living. But I mean, truth be told, we all got to pay our taxes.
That's true. And you know, speaking of Stephan Bonner, Stephan Bonner, I think, publicized that there are numerous problems with the house in terms of the sewage, the inadequate sewage facilities. Do you have any recollection of that?
Yeah, I mean, one of the issues that happened on the show was that, you know, there were so many. The thing is, the house is designed for one or two people maybe to use the bathroom at a time, not, you know, 14, you know, hungry fighters that are eating all the food and letting it all go into the restroom. And then inevitably that caused, you know, backup drainage. And there was this one time that I remember that they ended up quarantining us because, you know, staph infection had spread or some type of infection had spread throughout the house. And they had to have like a biological group come in there and like completely like re-sanitize the house. And, you know, they changed all the restroom facilities, I think, and fixed it up really nicely. And, you know, the Petitas, to their credit, and they are really they're top-notch when it comes to taking care of business. Because at the end of the day, you know, the show must go on, and they ensure that that happens. And Dana was trying to be a balance. You know, he's trying to be like a scheduler. You know, he was trying to make sure that everything could happen in a fashion that it would be, you know, that it would be what it became, you know. Dana did a good job. They really put together, they put it together, and no matter what happened, we were all committed to making this thing, to making it what it became, you know.
Well, you know, go ahead, I'm sorry.
I remember there were times when I was on the show and I was hating life. I mean, I was like, oh my gosh, it sucks. You know, these producers are having these meetings or telling us all the time they need material. And, you know, on some level, you know, I found myself jeopardizing my character in order to try to create a better show. And, you know, other people were doing the same thing, you know? And I felt that, I felt like I was, not so much as giving it my all, but I really felt like I was, you know, putting myself out there in a fashion that I don't feel really did me a lot of justice, you know?
Well,
but I mean,
yeah,
at the same time, I, at the same time, I understood that what I had to do in order to make this show interesting, in order to have this sport become what it is today.
Well, there's no doubt that you were a vital cast member and perhaps the first fighter to be edited to look like a cartoonish villain for the purpose of ratings and entertainment. I don't think anyone could doubt that. But what about a guy you mentioned earlier, Jason Thacker? He's always been a mystery man for the MMA world. I mean, it was obvious that he wasn't a professional liver fighter on the show. Why do you think he was put on that show?
There's many different reasons that they say they put him on the show, but probably one of the reasons was that the producers had seen that, you know, yes, he was able to handle himself. But if you watch some, like, have you ever seen any of his old fights?
Well, I saw against Lieben, but no, prior to that, no.
Well, he's had some fights, and he's a tough cat, you know, and I mean, he can fight. But I mean, at the time, I don't think MMA was where it was in Canada and the United States, and especially where he was at, I don't think it was. You know, right now, Canada, I think, is, like, you know, producing some of the best talent in the world. But at that time, you know, they weren't where we were. And, you know, he can fight. He's a tough kid. But, I mean, you got to think about the guys he was up against. He was up against, you know, a guy like Bobby Southworth, who just came over from Pride in Japan, fought Vitor Belfort, and did amazing, you know. He was knocking people out and doing really well. Mike Swick, who was out there beating, you know, taking down titles and belts. Forrest Griffin, who choked out Jeff Munson with a broken arm. Sam Hoger, who just got done, you know, taking down constant, you know, a belt in the South and taking belts in the Midwest. And then you got to look at Kenny Florian, who had a great fight against, I can't even remember the kid's name, but the kid was like, you know, he was 12-1, and Kenny Florian was really, like, putting it, you know, fought so hard against this guy. Dana White offered him a contract. I mean, Chris Lieben, who was a knockout artist out of, you know, out of Randy Couture's camp. I mean, we were the best people in the nation at that time that were,
right,
you know, that were up and coming. The UFC was looking at all of us. I was with the number one team in the world. I was with the Miletic Fighting System, training with the best team in the world that had most of the UFC belts locked up. 155, we had Jens Pope. 170, it was either Pat Miletic or Matt Hughes, depending on when we were talking. At 185, Rich Franklin had it locked up. 205, Tito Ortiz had it. We had nothing to do with him because Pat did not like him at all. And then at heavyweight, we had Tim Sylvia. We had every single belt except for the 205 belt locked up. I mean, our team was a dominant powerhouse. We dominated the sport. So Dana wanted to pull the best up-and-comers from each team. And that was me from Miletic. That was Forrest out of Georgia. Out of De La Grotti's, that was Kenny Florian. Out of Team Quest, it was Nate Quarry and Chris Lieben. You know what I mean? And then Jason Thacker came out of Canada to, you know, show international representation, and he did. And to Jason's credit, you know, I mean, he really was an integral, instrumental part of the show that ended up making it become what it became, which was amazing.
Yeah, well, it's good to go down memory lane and everything and hear about some of the fighters and going back so many years ago. And, you know, Jason Thacker, the idea of him going to the Hall of Fame, I wonder what people like Hoyce Gracie and Ken Shamrock would think about that. I mean, have you ever talked to anyone else about Jason Thacker? What do you think they would think, or what do you think they would say?
I mean, I'm sure, you know, they may agree with it, or they may have their reservation about it. But at the end of the day, you know, they started the party, but we were the ones who took the party to the people. You know, I understand that. Yes, they, you know, historically, I give a lot of respect to the roots and to where we come from and to what they did and to what they've done. But at the end of the day, that would have been a footnote in a history book at this given point in time if it wasn't for Jason Thacker and everybody on that season one of The Ultimate Fighter, and Dana White and the Fertittas, making that happen.
Now, speaking of Dana White, was it strange to have a non-fighter with an inflated amateur background, according to some, yelling at you guys, do you want to be an effing fighter? I mean, how did that make you guys feel? Was that inspiring or what?
Yeah, to be honest with you, it fired a lot of us up, because at the end of the day, I mean, whether or not he was a fighter was not what really registered to us. What registered to us was, this guy loves the sport, you know?
Right.
This guy really loves, I mean, when he was talking to us, he wasn't talking to us from the perspective, and at least I didn't take it. I can't speak for anybody else, but I took it as, this guy's not speaking to us from the perspective of whether or not he's trying to be a tough guy. He's speaking to us from the perspective of trying to advance our cause. The thing that every one of us at the end of the day, when we looked into each other's eyes and we knew that we were going to have to beat the hell out of each other, we knew that at the end of the day, the one thing we all agreed on was that we believed in the sport and we believed in what it could become. And he was the captain of the ship. I mean, we didn't really have to see him in that tough guy light to give him the credibility he deserved, because he was in essence, you know, the fire underneath our tails. And like the Fertittas, you know, they sat back quietly and they, you know, you could tell that they were putting the fire underneath Dana White's ass. You could tell that. You know? Because you could feel the chemistry, for lack of a better way to put it, of the relationships between the people. But at the end of the day, when we looked at Dana White, like we looked at the Fertittas as like the emperors of the kingdom and we're on the ship. But Dana White was the guy who was leading the ship, and his love and his passion for how far that ship could go is what led us to become what we became. And, you know, it fired us up. I mean, we didn't care about whether or not he was a pro boxer or amateur boxer or boxing teacher, boxer sizer, boxer this, boxer that, whether or not he had fought Mike Tyson or he had fought, you know, olive oil. We didn't care about that. The thing that we cared about at that point in time was giving our sport legitimacy, making something that people could relate to in a fashion that would be able to let them see that MMA is a beautiful thing. It's an amazing thing. And what we've been able to do with this, and, you know, thanks to that speech that Dana gave us and everything else that we did, we have created a sport. Listen to me. Are you listening to me, Carson?
Yes, I am.
Sam Hogan, Forrest Griffin, Mike Swick, Stephen Bonner, all of that. We have created a sport that is a worldwide phenomenon, that is competing with the top sports in the world, baseball, basketball, football, and soccer. And now is providing food and living in a way for men and women to provide for their families all across the world in places that they would have never had the opportunity to be able to provide for their families in the first place, thanks to the work of the Ultimate Fighter. So if Royce Gracie and Ken Shamrock had anything to say about Jason Paxton going into the Hall of Fame, the only thing that should be coming out of their mouth is thank you for your contribution and continuing and giving life to the thing that we gave so much to create.
I think that's right, Sam. I think that they would probably agree with that. And, you know, going back to the speech that Dana gave, some guys actually on the show seemed intimidated. And I think that that really speaks to the gravity of the moment and exactly what they were doing at that time. You know, it was almost make or break for the sport at that point, and what you guys did.
No. This was not almost make or break the sport. This was make or break the sport, and we knew that. We knew that. This was, if we did not succeed, this sport would die. This sport would have stayed underground, would not have become what it is. I can guarantee it. This sport would right now be on the same level as competitive hacky sack if it wasn't for what we did.
Now let's talk about what Sam Hogar's got going on in 2014. I've read online that you're running an MMA training center, but I'm being told that from some insiders that you're actually working as a bodyguard for Jay-Z and Beyonce. Is that true?
I had the opportunity to do work, yes, go ahead and do that with them. That was great. You know, I don't typically talk about my clients, so that's one of the top rules of doing security is you don't talk about your clients. One of the things that I've been concentrating on recently, you know, I have a wonderful gym in Houston, Texas, and it's going really well. I have a great, you know, great staff that, you know, that work with me. I have, like, Foster Volker. He's a guy who's been hitting up a lot of the MMA inner school, and he's an incredibly intelligent, talented, you know, mixed martial artist. He was actually with me back when I was with Miletich Fighting Systems Houston, and I had brought the Miletich Fighting Systems to Texas. And, we've been together, you know, the entire time. I also have another guy that's been with me the whole time. His name is Sean Machado. You know, he's an incredibly, you know, he came out, he was 2-0 when he first started, you know, when he came out as a pro. Who else do I have? Man, I have a lot of guys. Wilfredo Gonzalez. I have Erica Duggar, who, you know, she's my girlfriend, and she's been behind me for the last 10 years and seeing to the success of this gym. She's the business mind behind it. And now, believe it or not, she's now a pilot. She's a pilot. She's flying like Gulfstreams, and she flies like Oprah and Les Miles and all those people around, and Dwight Howard, and you know she does private she flies private jets. As a matter of fact, I think she was looking to get hired pretty soon by a company, by the MGM in Vegas or something like that. But, you know, she's building up her piloting and whatnot. That's going really well. And who else do I have at the gym? I'm trying to think. Brett Robinson, he's a great wrestling coach. I mean, we have an amazing group of guys that have, that have really kind of, come together. Daniel Fernandez, he took down Worlds at grappling. And, we have this group of guys that I have there. You know, they're very, they've been very instrumental in my success. And thanks to their support and their, the help that they've given me in reference to building Hogar Mixed Martial Arts, that has allowed me the freedom to actually go pursue acting.
Now, I want to go back to the bodyguarding thing because Ken Shamrock has also gone into this line of the work, and it seems like you guys are at the very top of the profession. Ken Shamrock was critical of Beyonce and Jay-Z's security team for allowing the famous elevator confrontation and assault with Solange, I believe, Beyonce's sister, against Jay-Z. Does that mean that Ken has directly criticized your work, or were you not on the detail when that incident went down? Or is he just criticizing the security procedures in general of Jay-Z's security team at that point?
Well, I honestly think that what he was doing was he was commenting on the way that that specific security guard handled it. And, I mean, I think that he was I think he was making it clear that, I mean, Ken's right. The first thing you do is, you get that person out of that area. I mean, as soon as you see that they start having those type of hostile intentions, you need to remove your client from the threat or remove the threat from the client, one of the two. And Ken's right. I mean, I agree with him. I agree with what he said. I mean, that's why the protocols were in place that were, whenever we were doing our job.
Yeah, Ken is reportedly doing work for 50 Cent and others, and that's a pretty high-profile assignment, and I know he said he's doing pretty well here. Maybe we could have a, sort of an informal or a bodyguard MMA match between you and Ken for the title of the best bodyguard. That would be pretty funny. You're certainly closer to your competitive prime, but there will be a lot of hip-hop doll riding on this fight in the form of bets, both legal and illegal. Any result could theoretically be possible, and taser use might be a factor.
That would be very comedic. I mean, I can imagine Ken. I can imagine Ken is really, he's really capitalizing on the relationship that he's created right now in order to build up, the clientele base that he has. I mean, especially with,
No, I'm sorry, God.
No, and I mean, I'm really glad to see that he's doing well,
What sort of training does one have to go through to become a legit bodyguard? Because you see Floyd Mayweather surrounded by these giants he has with him, and I often wonder if they're trained bodyguards or some hired people from his old neighborhood. Do you have any insight on that? I mean, is there anything in the way they carry themselves that reveals whether or not they're trained bodyguards?
I know the Mayweather family very well. Floyd Mayweather Sr. is my boxing trainer. He's been my boxing trainer, since the Bobby Southwood fight on The Ultimate Fighter. At the time that I was going to fight Bobby, if you want to, match this up historically, Floyd Mayweather Sr. was training Oscar De La Hoya. And in order for me to get 1 hour of his time, I remember I had to pay $500 an hour to work with. And then after a bunch of sessions, we became great friends. And I still, I still work with him. And, I mean, we talk on the phone all the time. And, I'm really, really close with that family. In reference to Floyd Jr.'s security, I don't know the official particulars. I know them all. I know Floyd Jr. I know them all. I hang out with them whenever I'm in Vegas, because we're I hang out with his dad. I don't really hang out with his son, because him and Floyd Sr., we have a really good relationship. We talk, we go out, we hang out. But Floyd Jr. right now, he's concentrating more on, his son and his family. I believe his son is actually an MMA fighter right now. Or he's studying to become an MMA fighter.
Wow. I would imagine that your MMA training is the perfect background for someone who's trying to get in this line of work. Of course, you need to have the correct temperament for it. Can you imagine someone like Crazy Horse Bennett trying to be a bodyguard, or how about Heath Herring?
Oh, man. I don't know about Crazy Horse. Crazy Horse would probably be a handful. But one of the issues with being a bodyguard, and I know this because I know when I was working in California with Heath Ledger doing some film work over there, I met his bodyguard. His bodyguard is a really, really great guy. We sat there and we spoke for hours. I think I talked to him a couple weeks ago, actually. And one of the things that, you know, he made pretty clear to me was that one of the most important elements of being a bodyguard is that people don't recognize you in public. Because if they see that you're around somebody else and that obviously you're a person, like say you're like a note like me or like Ken or like Tito Ortiz or like any or even Heath Herring or Crazy Horse, if you have any kind of like known clout, it becomes very easy for you to become the first target. So as soon as they take you out, now they can go after their second target. As a bodyguard, and I learned this from him when I was talking to him because we were on the set filming 11. He was telling me, he was telling me that like one of the most important parts about being a bodyguard is that you want to have almost a degree of invisibility within the public, you know, within a crowd, so then you can be right by your client in order to ensure that you don't give away, you know, so that you don't in essence, you know, put them in jeopardy with, you know, you being the source of first attack and then being the source of second attack. So I mean, it makes it really hard for, you know, a lot of people in the mixed martial arts profession to be able to have a job as a bodyguard for, like, say, like, diplomats or, like, you know, consulate members you know, senators, people from the House of Representatives. I don't think we'd ever qualify to be on the part of the presidential detail because, I mean, automatically people identify you and they go, okay, that guy's a badass. If we're going to go after him, we got to take this guy out first. You know, so then, I mean, what that really does is it makes you a target a lot of the time.
Now, how do people get in touch with you to hire you to guard them?
They either call me or they call Juarez, Alex Juarez, and he tells me exactly who my client is. I'm gonna have to do the work for.
Now, for our newer listeners, let's talk about your fighting career because you had a very, very good career. I mean, I forget, I don't know if there were MMA rankings back in your days, but you were probably a top 10 fighter for sure. 5-time UFC veteran, IFL fighter. You got to experience something that very few do, and now you're watching Beyonce's back, so to speak. Not bad for a young man from a political science background.
No. I'm not concentrating on watching their backs. I'm concentrating more on acting. That's what I'm doing. I'm spending my time building my acting career. The bodyguard and the security work and that other stuff, you know, which I was able to do, you know, was, you know, it's great and it's fun. And if they call me, you know, the security company calls me and tells me that they need me to do the work that they need me to do, then I'll do it. But, I mean, at the end of the day, Sam Hoger right now is an actor. I'm doing acting. I went out to California for pilot season. I just got done filming a movie over here with Chris Pratt in Louisiana, and I'm looking to go out here for CSI New Orleans and see if I can get a lead role on that. I'm looking to do, I mean, that's what I've been doing. I got my SAG card doing lines with De Niro in the movie Grudge Match, and before I went out to California for pilot season, I was filming a movie with Al Pacino. And I'm concentrating on my acting right now. You know, I'm studying with the world's most prestigious members of the Actor Studio under Kathleen Leslie, who's a voting member out of Actor Studio West. I got to study under Christina Chauncey. She's like one of the top camera technique ladies in the world. I got to study with Leslie Kahn School of Acting over there in California. They are like the best acting school. I won't say the best because there's obviously the groundlings. They're really good too. Don't get me wrong. I mean, they have their five levels and whatnot, but I got to study under Christina with Leslie Kahn School of Acting. I mean, the stuff that I've been able to learn in reference to the class, because, I mean, I'm a method actor. And, like, my goal is to be as great of an actor as Heath Ledger was when he was, you know, when he was playing Joker in Batman. I mean, if you look at the character of Joker in the movie Batman, you could tell that he has, you know, like, studied the intention, the mood, the ambition, desire, psychology, state, history, relationships that he has. And, I mean, it's such a pure character that he created there. that at no point in time can I look at the Joker when I'm looking at him performing that part, being that part. Can I, at no point in time can I look at the Joker and say, wait a second, that's a joke. Or
yeah.
No, or wait a second, that's, I'm sorry, wait a second, I screwed up. I say, wait a second, that's Heath Ledger. I never see Heath Ledger in there. I always see the character. And I'm trying to become that great of an actor. I'm working on it. I'm studying the craft. You know, I've studied the Stanislavski method. I've gone really deep with that. I'm studying the Strasberg method, which is like the method. I'm studying under some of the greatest minds in acting right now. When I was able to go study with, you know, the members of, you know, well, with Kathleen Leslie and the members of the Actors Studio West. I mean, these are the people who, like Marlon, you know, who Brando came from, and who, you know, I mean, these are the best actors in the world, and I'm learning from them because I want to be an actor on that level. I was hanging out, as a matter of fact. Here's a story for you. In New Orleans, when I was filming a movie that is going to be coming out pretty soon, that is going to be bigger than Expendables or whatever these other people are doing. It's going to be a huge movie. It's massive. Massive. But my point being, when I was over there in New Orleans, I was sitting there with one of the top stunt guys in the world. His name is Eddie Matthews. He was like, for example, he was Stallone's stunt double in Grudge Match, and he's done all kinds of crazy, like, lights himself on fire and driving in a car, blowing through doors and in this car lit on fire, coming out of the car. You know, he's like a super high-level stunt guy. And I was sitting there talking to him about, like, what it takes to become a great actor. You know, and we were talking about the industry and talking shop. And one of the things that he told me that really resonated with me was he said, Sam, be careful about how good of an actor you want to become. And I said, well, why is that? He goes, because if you ever have to do a really evil character, if you want to do that character really well, you have to open yourself up to the demons that that person and that character would really have to accept in order to become that character, to be able to deliver it on that level so that people could see that you're that character and never see through it to see who you really are. So he said, be very, very careful about how far you want to go with it. And I, you know, when he said that to me, I mean, that's still, that conversation, and then we had like an extensive conversation about, you know, because I'm, you know, we had an extensive conversation about, like, you know, the religious context of, you know, the religious context which people can put, you know, becoming character, you know, acting with, well, we were talking about religion and acting and how they've conflicted at times and how they've worked together at times and how they're, you know, they're separate now. And, you know, we talked about how, you know, we talked about, like, you could name an A-lister in the industry from Schwarzenegger all the way through to, like, whoever. And we were talking about all of the details and what it takes and who they are. And all in all, it was a great experience in which I was able to learn a lot. But if you ask Sam Hoger what Sam Hoger is doing right now, Sam Hoger is an actor. I mean, you can look me up on the Internet Movie Database on the IMDb.com.
Right.
I mean, I'm doing all kinds of different projects. I got my SAG card now. I'm a member of the Guild, you know, the Screen Actors Guild. I'm writing a project that I'm looking to go ahead and start casting here probably in the next probably 4 or 5 months. We're going to start filming it. I have a production team in Houston, and I mean, I want to produce, you know, I want to become everything I know that I can become, because I'm taking the same fire and passion that I had with MMA and putting it into acting and watching it materialize into something great. And I think, to be honest with you, at the end of the day, I think this is what God wants me doing with my life, so I'm doing it. You know?
Yeah, it sounds like you're real passionate about this, Sam, and that's great. And you know, I just kind of wanted to ask a few more questions here because we have a guest coming up in the next hour who says he's a former business associate of Mike Swick, and I know that you and Mike Swick were on The Ultimate Fighter together. Was there anything on the show?
I knew him really well. I taught him chess, you know. I taught him how to be very strategic and very smart, at least on the chessboard.
Was there anything that on the show that would suggest whether or not Swick was a good or bad businessman?
Oh, no, Swick is a great businessman. I mean, Swick is one of the best businessmen that I've ever, like, known. I mean, I've known Swick off the show, too. I mean, Swick has opened up companies that have been able to, you know, that he's been able to leave running and that are successfully growing right now and that are doing really well. As a matter of fact, if I recall, he opened up a T-shirt printing company when he got off the show. And that T-shirt printing company right now, I believe it's in California. It's a print, not T-shirt, but it's a print company, is doing exceptionally well. And it is really, really, like, you know, taking off. And it, you know, because Swick is a guy who's really, you know, he's a great guy. I mean, he's a good guy. And, he, you know, the one thing about Swick, though, I'll tell you this, and I can tell you he learned this from Dana White, is that he does not put up with people who want to be deceitful. He does not put up with people who are prima donnas. He does not put up with liars. And he does not put up with thieves. You know, he does not. And one of the things that he's really quick to do, he'll have a sharp tongue and a sharp temper for someone who tries to lie to him, someone who tries to steal from him, someone who tries to slander or hurt him, or someone who tries to do something negative. And, I mean, you have to understand, I mean, a lot of these guys, from what I've seen, and at least in my own personal experience owning a gym, you come across a lot of scumbag people, a lot of them. Pat Miletich came across a couple of scumbag people that I had to see him deal with. And these scumbags, they want to attach themselves to us because they see that we have a name and they don't have anything. You know, they probably come from some, like, they come from nothing. And they attach themselves to us. And then when they attach themselves to us, they start seeing that they're getting respect that they've never had before because they're not willing to work for it. They see that all of a sudden they're getting notoriety and they're getting some, you know, people are starting to say, okay, we want to listen to you. And these scumbags, what they do with that is they go out in public and when they, you know, they start living as though they think they are who we are. And the worst part about this is that in the process of them behaving like this, they're now expecting us. I had this happen to me personally. They're expecting us to now treat them like they're us, like the public treats us. It's like if someone hangs around you all day and all of a sudden, after hanging around you for an extensive period of time, they come around and, you know, they start getting the respect Bob Carson gets as, you know, a great radio host and a great DJ. But now they're looking at Bob Carson and saying, Bob, you're in my way. What are you doing here? I'm the one who deserves the respect. Bob, get the hell out of here. Could you imagine that, Bob? How angry would you be about that?
Well, you know, I think you bring up a good point, and I can only imagine this taking place when you get into the inner workings of the business. And, you know, you mentioned Pat Miletich, who's had a great degree of success in the industry, because you see this even outside of the industry. I mean, you see this, you can look in your workplace.
Now, exactly, Bob. There are scumbags everywhere. Scumbags.
Yep.
And they try to attach themselves, like you said, in the workplace to the successful people in the workplace. And then when they realize, oh, wait a second, I'm not that person, but I want to be that person. You know what I have to do to become that person? I have to eliminate that person's credibility. I have to eliminate that person's good standing. I have to eliminate the goodwill that they've done in the community. I have to sabotage that person in order to try to see if they'll accept me now as that person. That is horrible. I had business partners that I'll put it to you this way. I had business partners when I opened up my gym. Oh, my gosh. And let me tell you, Bob. Oh, man, you can tell this is making me furious. But I had business partners that tried to sabotage me after I made them tons and tons of money.
Yeah.
They tried to sabotage me because they wanted to be me. And you can't be Sam Hogan. You can't be Stephen Bonner or Forrest Griffin. You can't be Mike Swick because you didn't put in the blood, sweat, and tears it took to become that. But now you want to sit there and go talk trash about me? After the work that I did, put money in your pocket, made you a man again, let you look at men in the eyes, gave you an opportunity to feed your family when you couldn't. You want to look at me? You want to come and tell me I'm the bad guy when I made you a man again? You are not that. You are not the guy. You are not. You're a scumbag. And every word out of your mouth is an attempt to trash who I am, the guy who put you where you are. And now you think you're going to remove me and talk to you? Do you see how I feel about that?
Yeah.
There is no room for trash like that. And I mean, if these guys were going to come on the show and trash me in any way, I would expect you to cut that off because that is a sign of, that is disgusting.
Now, before I let you go, I want to give you the chance to make an emotional appeal for the love of Misha Tate, who we've featured many times on our program. I have to say she's a great lady and excellent underrated fighter. So give it all you got, Sam. This is your big chance to win her away from Brian Caraway without pulling a Rafael Torre.
You are crazy. No, me and Ronda
I know,
Rousey.
You're married.
No, I'm not married. I have a girlfriend. Whoa. Calm down.
Okay.
Bob, calm down. Wow. No. I have a wonderful girlfriend whose name is Erica Duggar, who I love very much, who I've been together with for almost 10 years. And me and Ronda Rousey are really good friends. I knew her before she was, when she just came back from the Olympics in China and did really well in judo, and now she's doing amazing. And I'm really proud of her. You know, she's doing good things. But I'll tell you what. Misha, you are a beautiful girl, incredibly beautiful girl. Every time I see you on the screen, I think that you are breaking many men's hearts, and you have a very lucky man, Brian Caraway. My hat's off to you, buddy. Good job on getting such a beautiful girlfriend. And Misha, I hope you two have a wonderful life and have some beautiful children, because you and I both know Brian Caraway is bringing the ugly stick to this engagement.
Well, you know, I think they're a good couple. They really look like they've been, you know, around together for a long time. You know, when they were struggling, when they first started fighting, and you could sort of I think they make a good couple. But what do I know? You know.
No. And I mean, I don't know the personal inner workings of their relationship, but what I do know is that she's an incredibly beautiful girl. I'm very happy that Brian Caraway, you know, hopefully taking very good care of her. Hopefully she's taking very good care of him. Hopefully they're going to have some beautiful children. And, you know, I look forward to seeing both of their careers do really well. And hopefully Brian Caraway can hold his tongue a little bit, because I know he tends to get very passionate. But so does
right.
Dana White. So does Sam Hoger. So does any of us fighters whenever we're talking in reference to something or someone we love. But, damn, Brian, good job, dude. That is a beautiful lady you have right there. My God, Misha. Oh, my God. I wish I was single. I wish you were single. We could go have some coffee at Starbucks. But that is not the case. God bless your heart. I hope you guys do really well. And to all the fans out there in mixed martial arts, thank you for supporting, you know, what we have worked so hard to create. Thank you for being as hardcore and dedicated and amazing as you guys have been. I love every single one of you guys out there. Congrats to Ronda on her good job. On bringing, you know, ladies to the UFC. I'm really happy that you did that as well. Anytime any of you guys are in Houston, feel free to come by my gym. It's Hoger Mixed Martial Arts. You can see our website, www.hogermma.com. Friend request me on Facebook. And if any of you guys are into acting, please send me your stuff on Facebook, because, you know, I'm looking to produce a movie. Any big directors out there, if you're looking for a great method actor who is really I'm not looking for these little cheesy one-liners that I've been doing lately. I'm looking for, like, lead roles in major feature films. I might do TV shows, but I'm really looking at films. Please feel free to contact me on Facebook as well. Big thank you to my girlfriend, Erica Duggar, all the people who help run my gym, Alonia, and oh, my gosh, all you guys, Foster, Brett, Sean, all you guys. Big thank you to all of you. And, thanks to all my castmates, you know, Bobby Southworth, Jason Thacker, Forrest Stephen, all these, Chris Sanford. Who remembers Chris? Old Chris, too, man. Chris Sanford, Jason Rafferty, you know, Mike Swick. You know, I mean, without the work that we put in together, this sport would not be what it is today. And my biggest thank you goes, of course, to Dana White and the Fertittas for everything they've been able to help see become reality, and to the families that are now able to support, you know, themselves and their children and everything that they've been able to create with what we've been a part of.
Sam Hoger, thanks a lot for coming on Carson's Corner, my friend. Good luck in the future.
Carson, thank you so much, and thank you for being a great supporter of the sport and for, you know, seeing this become what it's going to become. And, you know, I look forward to hearing this, this podcast, seeing that you are thriving forward in reference to me.
Thank you very much, champ. Take care, my friend. Have a good weekend.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
All right, that was Sam Hoger for a legendary interview here on Carson's Corner, one of which I'm sure thousands of people will hear. There's a lot of newsworthy comments in that interview. And listen, I've got so many people on the line here. I don't know who is who, so I'm going to bring I'm looking to speak to Pete Moran, and I've got about six or seven people online, and I don't know who is who. I got some people calling from Skype and others from landlines and whatnot, so just kind of bear with me here. I'm just going to bring people on individually. Hello, you're on Carson's Corner with Bob Carson. Hello? Hello? Okay. Let's go to another person. Hello, you're on Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
Yeah, hi. Hello? Pete Moran calling.
Hey, Pete, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you, Bob?
Good, good, good. We have a lot to talk about here, and we just wrapped up with Sam Hoger. Let me just introduce you to the people out there. We have a bunch of people on the line trying to find out who's calling. We have Pete Moran on with us now. He is a former business partner / associate of former MMA fighter Mike Swick. Our lawyers here at Carson's Corner have advised me to read the following before getting into this controversial interview. Our company, Carson's Corner, Inc., accepts no liability for the content of this interview or for the consequences of any actions taken on the basis of the information provided. All viewpoints, facts, opinions, statements, averments, disclosures, burps, farts, throat clearings are those of Mr. Moran and do not necessarily reflect the views of Carson's Corner, Inc. That, of course, was a little tongue-in-cheek there towards the end. But sorry, Pete, my high-priced team of attorneys insisted that I say that. They're afraid of that this interview is almost too hot to handle. I mean, can you believe that?
Yeah.
The memo that I got from them was that this is too hot to handle. But in any event, we just wanted to find out what was going on. I want to say at the outset of this interview, we don't want to bash Mike Swick here. I don't intend for this to be an opportunity for anyone to simply hate on him. My intent is not to give one person a forum to tell a one-sided story. So, in fact, we're going to reach out to Mike Swick and give him the opportunity to respond, which I'm sure you understand. However, one of the functions of the Underground Forum, which used to be universally considered the most valuable, was in letting people who had no other options try and appeal to the community to address problems. So really what I want to do is give you the opportunity to present your case in a way that you perhaps weren't able to do so in the forums. Let's get into the main problems that you've had with Mike, bearing in mind that a lot of people listening here won't be familiar with what you have to say or the situation. Let's start right at the beginning. So basically, you were an early investor in the American Kickboxing Academy spinoff gym located in Thailand, which Swick was apparently either in charge of or in some way position of decision-making authority over. Is that an accurate description of the situation so far?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, he was the CEO shareholder, and I was a 25% shareholder.
Okay, and so basically, how did you become become an investor in the project, and how did you make contact with Swick originally?
Well, this goes back to 2008 when I met Mike. You know, I was in the hospitality business, so we met way back in 2008, and Mike mentioned he wanted to do a gym, so I was excited about that, and so we stayed in contact and wanted to do this thing. I was actually on board and on the ground in Thailand when he tried to start the first gym, which was Cartel. He had a couple other shareholders at that point, and I was instrumental in that as well. But that, as a lot of people may know, did not get a foothold. It wasn't successful. It fell to pieces. I then stayed on board and got everything sorted. And basically, if it wasn't for me on the ground for the last 2.5 years, Mike wouldn't have that gym today. That's a fact. I found the land, paid for the leases, did all the research, all of these sorts of things. So that's the reason why I'm a bit angry, because I basically got shunted out towards the end of it. And, I don't mind being shunted out of anything, but I would have liked to have at least been paid for what those shares were worth.
What were your first impressions of Swick on a personal level and as a businessman? And did you have any misgivings? Did everything seem to be on the up and up?
Well, on a personal level, just like anybody else would, you know, I was a little bit starstruck in the very beginning. You know, it's Mike Swick. I watched the show that he was in the very beginning when I used to live in Thailand, when I was living in Thailand, and he walked into my restaurant. So, yeah, I'm like, wow, there's Mike Swick. So just like anybody would, this guy's a celebrity. So, you know, I wanted to meet the guy. I wanted to know who he was, and I was proud to be know the guy. And when he said, hey, look, maybe we can go into business, I was very excited about that. I was very motivated. The thing is, when you get to know people, you know, we all have a facade, we all have our masks, and when you first meet someone, that's the impression you get from someone. But once you get to know them on a personal level, these masks can sometimes dissolve or drop off, and we get to see the real person. And over that three-year period, Mike and I went through a hell of a lot of stress, and we went through a lot of pressure, and there was a hell of a lot of things happening, but both of us became who we really were. And now I'm not saying I'm a saint or anything like that, far from it, but the difference between me and Mike, I don't promote myself as being anything but what I am. I am what you see is what you get with me. With Mike, I got to see a different side of Mike, that's all.
What were the original terms of the deal supposed to be relating to your investment? Lay it out for the people listening.
Well, my investment was originally, Mike emailed me and said I could have 15% with no investment, which is a great deal for me because I only had very little capital at the time. But then I got my mother passed away in that time that we were building this gym, and so I had an inheritance, which I offered up. And Mike said if I put in an extra investment, I can have 25%, which obviously the more investment I got, the better for me. So we went with that. It was $60,000 for an extra 10%. So all up, 25% was my investment. Now, this is before we'd even broken ground. This is before we'd even had land. We didn't even have a company formed before we did this. So that was what we had in writing, and then we formed the company. Mike was a 75% shareholder. I was a 25% shareholder. That was it, just me and him.
How much are we talking about for your initial investment? I mean, what sort of return were you supposed to see on it? I'm trying to get a sense of what you may have been promised. Go ahead.
Well, I put in $60,000. I put $60,000 US. I came a little bit short of that. I think I got to about $57,000 US. What had happened was before this gym had started, I'd actually borrowed money from Australia, sold my car, sold my 401k or my superannuation, left my job, packed up my family, went to Thailand to try and help with the first gym. I lost about $40,000 at that point on that first trip. So, but again, I still stayed, and I used that money to live in Thailand to support myself to continue on with this current gym, which was to stay there. Mike was in the States preparing for his fights, et cetera, but I was the one in Thailand doing all of this research and trying to find the land, and which I actually did. We found a couple of different pieces of land. Some fell through, some were just not ideal. We looked at purchasing gyms that were already running. So I was the guy doing all of that and relaying that information to Mike. So, but I was the guy going and seeing all of these people. Once we found the current piece of land, I'm the one that found that, and I'm the one that contacted it, and no one else had any money. Mike had no money, so I put up the money for the lease and all of that sort of stuff. So it was only after the secondary shareholder came on board is when the real money came in, but that didn't come in until maybe about August of 2013. So, you know, we were well underway. Clearing that land and getting things built well before that, and that was from my money. Okay, my money was only a little bit, but once that money ran out, I became redundant.
What reasons did you have for wanting to invest in this project specifically? I mean, were you doing this in any way as an MMA fan and wanted to be involved in the sport, or was it strictly the fact that you thought it'd be a good deal?
Well, both, mate. You know, I mean, I believe in Mike. You know, Mike. I liked Mike when I first met him, and I knew he was a real go-getter, and I believed in him, and I was a fan of Mike. So, you know, what better? It's a great thing to invest in something that not only do you believe in, but you think it's going to be a great partnership. I was looking to have a great time in business. You know, a lot of business I've worked along a lot of years, and I know sometimes it's a pain in the ass, but I wanted to have fun, and I thought this was going to be a fun, exciting investment, and a lucrative investment at the same time. And yeah, I like the MMA. I used to watch MMA. So, I mean, it was a perfect scenario for me. You know? So,
do you have
I'm as shrewd as anybody else.
Do you have any background in gym? I'm sorry. Do you have any background in gym ownership or as a provider of capital for these kinds of ventures?
No. No,
okay.
This was my first business venture. So, and I put everything into it. You know, maybe I was a bit silly to do that. You know, but I have business experience. You know, I've been in management for a long, long time in hospitality, in these kinds of areas. So I knew what I was doing. I know how to look at the numbers. And look, a business is a business is a business. If you have a product, you sell that product, you know what your returns are on that product, you know what your margins are. It's all the same thing. It's just a slightly different box. That's about it. But if you've got business skills, you can run any kind of business. You've just got to look at the back end. The back end is always important. The front end was always going to be Mike. I was always going to look after the back end. And look, I was the one that was going to cross the T's, dot the I's, and make sure that the money coming in was all placed properly. And we were actually making a profit. You know, that's in a nutshell. You know.
Now, I'm certain, incidentally, that you have proof of the money you've put into this project that you could provide if challenged, right? Just because I anticipate, and we have a bunch of callers on the line that I'm going to get to in just a few moments. Some people have been holding on the line for almost an hour now, but we have all sorts of objections to this interview, and I'm just trying to ascertain whether you have all these bases covered.
Well, of course I do. Look, even before I sold out. Now, listen, I sold my shares in that business, right? So obviously they wouldn't have bought those shares from me if I didn't have proof of what I spent. Now, they know it, and I know it. It's all documented. It's all legal. We went through the lawyers. Now, the only downside to that sale was I didn't get what I should have gotten for the shares. What happened was I was sent a couple of emails. I won't go into those right now. That forced me not to accept what the shares were worth. They basically forced me to accept half of what the shares were worth. At the time, I was broke, had no other choice, had to go home, had to take my son out of school, had a whole lot. It was enough for me. I'd had enough. I couldn't do it anymore. I'm 50 years old, so, you know, I can't keep... I'm not a 35-year-old guy that can living on his own. I've got a wife and I've got a child. So I had to make that call. Took the money and returned home. And I returned home to a massive debt that I had accrued before I went over to do this in the first place. So all the money that I received went up in a puff of smoke. I've only just gotten back on my feet now. I've just invested in another restaurant here, and I'm doing really well. I'm happy again, man. But this gives me the opportunity and the money to pursue what I'm going to do with Mike Swick.
Pete, we have calls on the line. Do you have any problem taking phone calls? I know we have a lot more material to cover, but I really feel bad that people are on hold for such a long time. So do you have any problems if we take
any
phone calls?
I don't mind if you take calls, but if these guys are going to come on and just, you know, point their fingers at me and judge me, you know, it's not much point. Look, everyone's just got to understand this, okay? Put yourself in my shoes. You worked for 3 years on a project. You invested every single cent. And we're talking nearly $200,000 here. We're not talking 50. We're talking nearly $200,000. And you lose everything. Put yourself in your shoes. Would you be angry? Would you want to do something about it? That's all they've got to do. They can jump on this celebrity bandwagon all they like, but people are people are people. It doesn't matter if you're a celebrity. That doesn't give you the right to do anything different to anyone else. We wouldn't accept that from a stranger on the street, so we shouldn't accept it from people who are so-called celebrities. It's as simple as that, mate.
Yeah, well said. And you've been very, very cordial here You know, you've had no problem, and there's so much I want to talk, but I want to bring some of these people on the air here. This one is from 817. I believe this is the gentleman that called at the beginning of the show. Can you just give us your name and town?
Yes.
And please try to keep it, you know, as respectful as possible, please.
Hey, Bob.
Yes.
Bob, how you
yes.
doing, guy? Hey, this
Who's
is
this?
Butch. Butch. Butch.
What's up, brother?
Hey, I'm from Fort Worth, Texas, brother. I met you out here in Dallas at one of Mark Cuban's show, bro.
Yes, I remember you. I
How
think,
you
yes.
doing, man?
Good.
Hey, listen to me. You were very personable. You didn't have an ego. You shook my hand. You talked to me, and I've always appreciated it. We're talking 8 years ago, 5 years ago, something like that. I've always wanted to tell you how much I enjoyed meeting you and how down-to-earth you were. I don't think most people know that. And you spent about 10 minutes with me, and I've always appreciated you, bro.
Thank you. I remember that specifically. I think I had my Fox News jacket on, which really shows
you. You absolutely did. Yeah, you did, Bob. You absolutely did, bro. And I appreciate you. I appreciate what you've done for the sport. I appreciate what you've done for radio. If I could give you a Marconi, I'd give you one myself. But I'm not in charge of things like that. However, what I'm in charge of is telling you this. I caught up and listened to Sam Hoger, the gentleman.
Right.
Came off very well spoken, Bob.
Yes.
He's got the looks. He's
yep.
got the voice. He's
yep.
got the talents. He's got the size. He's got it all.
Yeah.
Hey, you listen to baseball. You talk about a five-star athlete. You know, can they run? Can they jump? Can they hit? Can they field? Can they throw? Look, I'm talking in life. Sam Hoger is a five-star person. I didn't know it until tonight. I'll be honest with you. I've heard about all the bodyguard. I've heard about all the, you know, the, I don't know, the card they get when they're actors, the Screen Actors Guild, the SAG
yeah.
card. I've heard all these stories. I had no idea. And because of you, I now know about Sam Hoger. And by the way, hey, listen, guys, he's only about 4 or 5 miles, hours away from me. I can drive down to Hoger MMA anytime I want. Not saying I would, but I could do that. And you know why? Because of you. You are what I would call the staircase or the pathway to things like this. I've been listening to you for years, bro, and I met you. I've listened to you. I feel like we're friends, even though, hey, you wouldn't know me if you saw me walking past in the mall. Doesn't matter. I know you, and I know quality people. You are one of them. Sam Hoger is one of them, and I am proud, not taking anything away from this Australia gentleman that we have on here right now. No disrespect, but I know this. Listen to me, Bob. I know quality, and you are quality, sir. I wish you could have me on. I wish I could sit here and talk with you. I
well,
couldn't
Butch.
Talk like Sam Hoger. I couldn't talk
Butch.
That well. Look, I'm just a normal guy. I'm Butch from Fort Worth. Go
Friend
ahead, Bob.
Me on Facebook, man. If you want to come on and talk shop here, please do so. We really appreciate it. Friend me on
hey.
Facebook if you can.
Listen to me, Bob. I will do that. Let me tell you a little something. I will talk to you about MMA. I will talk to you about boxing. I will talk even professional wrestling. I was very, let's just say, friends with, I'm not a name dropper, with the Von Erichs down here from Fort Worth. I knew
oh, wow.
Kevin. Still know Kevin. Kevin's still alive. But I knew David. I knew Chris. I knew Mike. I knew Kerry. I didn't know Jack Jr. He died when he was 6 from electrocution. But I know all kinds of people in professional wrestling. And they all kind of intertwine one another. Wouldn't you agree, Bob?
Yes.
And listen, you got The Rock, who is a huge MMA star, MMA fan, and he is he's a star both in professional wrestling, and he crosses over into movies. You got The Rock, you got Stone Cold, you got The Undertaker, of course, Brock Lesnar, everybody knows him. But the point is this, you want to talk to me about sports in general, I can talk sports. The only sport I'm not well-equipped is soccer. Look, I'll tell you honestly, soccer is a girl's sport. I hate to offend people, but I got to be a little controversial in order to get back on your show.
Well, that's like Ann Coulter who dismissed the soccer fans. Butch, I'm sorry, we got to run. We got a lot of people on the line. Please
hey,
keep it
I
close.
Love you, Bob.
Love you,
I love
too,
you, bro.
Thank you, brother. Take
All right.
care.
I'll talk to you next time, bro. I love you.
All right. Thank you, Butch.
Peace
okay.
in the Middle East.
We're going to go to 832 area code. Welcome to Carson's Corner. Can you please give us your name and town?
Yes, this is Mark from Houston. What's up, Pete?
Hey, how are you,
Mark?
Hey,
Mark.
Hey, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, man, what's going on?
I don't know, just kind of disturbed.
I see you disappear from Facebook messaging me, eh? You fall off the planet.
No, I'm just not 13 years old, so I don't really do a whole lot of Facebook. But I don't know, buddy. I was kind of there for most of what went down in Thailand with Mike, and I just a few discrepancies in what you were saying.
Well, look, Mark, you know Mark longer than I do. So.
Yeah, well, I just got a quick question for you. Well, a couple. You said you don't promote yourself, and you say what you are and all that. What is your Twitter follower name? What is your at address? What is it? Lying Boy?
Right now?
That's how you promote yourself?
No, Lying Mofos.
Oh, you didn't read that. Oh.
Yeah.
It's written in Australia.
Yeah, so.
But it was, I just find it weird that you said you put $60,000 American. Buddy, I remember about $27,000 American.
Okay.
And I don't know why you would bite the hand that feeds you. Pete, remember where you were living. He took you out of that, took your family in, gave you a job.
Mark,
it's
listen,
mind-blowing.
All right, let him respond, Mark.
Mark, Mike didn't take me out of anywhere. I was working in Australia with my family. So listen, when it comes to facts...
I meant in Thailand.
Hey, I went to Thailand because of Mike. That fell through. I chose to stay in Thailand. Right? I used that money. Now, if you want to look, I will upload to my Twitter account the exact money that I spent. Now, whatever Mike's told you, it is not $27,000, my friend. That is what I spent just on the very first portion of that before we even had a company. That was to pay for the lease. It was $57,000 U.S. I'll send you the spreadsheet, my friend. Mark, well, that's great that you have that, but you're not the accountant of the company. You're also not the law firm of the company. Now, I saw what Mike did when he cheated you. Like, he wouldn't even buy you a packet of cigarettes.
I don't have Twitter. I gave you money for cigarettes.
Go ahead, Mark.
Mark, that's fine. Well, if you don't have Twitter, then how do you know what I've been putting up in my book? What are you basing your facts on?
Because unlike you,
I'm basing it on facts.
Can I finish?
Go ahead, Mark.
March 31st, you received your money from the gym, which was four times what you say. Look,
let's not go over the money on this radio program.
Okay, that's why I'm not mentioning money.
You're going into legal realm.
Didn't it say on your no disclosure form that you can't discuss the gym and all that stuff, but yet you happily signed that form and took your money? It's just mind-blowing. So why now? Why 4 months after you got your good amount of money are you just now wanting to talk shit? It's mind-blowing. Did it take you that long to edit all these emails that you've been putting out?
Mark, I suggest that you get a Twitter account, sign up, and then you will see that the emails aren't edited. They're screenshots. How do you edit a screenshot, Mark?
How did you edit yourself in the 1986 Playgirl magazine?
I didn't.
No, I mean, you're good with computers. Did you not work on the computers at the gym? It can be done. Why did it take you 4 months to come out and deface Mike like this? He's the best human being you know, and you know he is.
Okay.
This guy flies across the country to see a 9-year-old leukemia kid. He's going to screw you over? Come on, dude. Come on.
Pete, do you have anything that you want to spread, Mark? We'll let Pete go, and then Mark, we'll let you close out on any statements here.
All right, thanks, bud.
Pete, do you have anything you want to add?
Am I supposed to talk now?
Yeah, go ahead.
Mark's buddy. You know, they've been buddy for a long, long time. So it's quite irrelevant what Mark says. You know, Mark's just repeating what Mike wants to say, but Mike doesn't want to say that himself. Mike knows
Mike's
what he
sleep.
Listen. See, he still interrupts, even though he said I can talk. I do have everything in fact. Nothing's edited. And if someone could show me how to upload every single email onto a web space, then I'll do it. And you'll get thousands of emails unedited. People can go through it as they choose. I don't give a shit. I've got nothing to hide. But Mike Swift does, because you see what he says to people. You see what he says to guys like Roger Huerta, J.J. Ambrose, all of these people. It's not necessary.
Who,
I don't know.
Who, because
them.
Those emails are now his friend
he's,
again. but go ahead.
All right, Mark, we're gonna kind of give you a last statement here, and then we're gonna proceed on with some of the questions for the interview. So go ahead, Mark, please.
Well, I mean, if it's a legal issue with work, I get that. Why is he throwing Mike's name that has nothing to do with the gym under the bus? It's just like Molly Malone. He tried to scam them, too, when he got fired. Look what's going on now. Y'all have a good night.
Thank you, Mark.
Oh, all right, careful. Hey, careful, Mark. That's slander, mate. Be careful. Be very careful. Do you have proof of that?
I don't know if Mark is still with us. Mark
Hello?
Is on the line, but...
Yeah.
Okay.
Listen, Bob, what it is, Mike, Bob, if I may,
yeah.
Mike's always threatened me with things like, threatening me with, I better not be slanderous. He's always confused slander and libel. And I'm not being slanderous. I'm being very careful about what I do say. And slander or libel is something, it's a statement without proof. Now, all of my statements and all of my writings, they're proof. I have proof, okay? So when Mark says things like anything about my past, it's a very, very sensitive area that everyone has to be worried about, because without proof, it is slander or it is libel. I'm not sure if Mike understands how that all works. He throws the word around, but I don't think he understands the word. So, Mark, if you're still listening, mate, be very careful what you put in writing, mate, because without proof, it will be slander.
All right. Now, so basically, you were brought in as an investor. When did things start to go wrong? And are we talking about small problems which became large ones, or were things, you know, bad right from the get-go?
Well, no, it certainly wasn't bad right from the get-go. It basically happened that we're pretty much, the gym was, 95% completed. But look, over 3 years, over 2.5 years, I see things like what Mike says about certain different individuals, how he thinks, et cetera, et cetera. I start to form my own opinions on that, and I'm starting to think, wow, is this what I want to be involved with? Is this going to be as much fun as I thought it was going to be? Is it going to be stressful? Is it going to be, I didn't want to do it in the end, right? I quit as the GM of that company. In fact, I wasn't the GM when I quit. I was put on as an advisor at that stage, but still a shareholder. I'd had enough of that. I didn't want to do it anymore. I was struggling. I couldn't afford my rent. I couldn't afford the school for my son. I was struggling. And here's this, after I'd put all my money into it, I didn't know when that struggle was going to stop. I could see this gym getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I just thought, well, we're not even going to have a return on our investment for years to come. And at my age, I just went, look, I can't do that anymore. I want it out. And I was happy to sell the shares at that point. And then I thought about it, well, look, if there's no money there to buy the shares, I'll keep the shares. I sent them both an email, the two shareholders, and said, I want to keep my shares, and I'm going to return to Australia. I was sent an email saying, no, we want the shares. That's it. I didn't want to sell the shares. I was forced to sell the shares. Now, Mark can tell his side of the story. Mark doesn't know anything about what happened. But the point of fact is, I lost shares that I didn't want to sell, and if I did want to sell them, I did not get what I should have got for them. I wanted my money back. I wanted to return to Australia and take care of my family. I returned to Australia, and for 4 months, the reason why it took me so long is that I struggled to pay off a $54,000 debt. And to do that, I moved around a lot because I had creditors after me the day I arrived in the country. And if anyone knows, and everyone's been through this just about, when you have a creditor after you, you've got to run back, or you've got to hide, or you've got to do whatever it takes so you can save up enough money to pay those creditors off. And that's what I had to do. So, yeah, I went underground for the first couple of months. No one knew where I was. I didn't have a phone number. I didn't have anything. I was trying to hide from creditors. And you think that's fun with a seven-year-old kid? It's not fun. I
now, let me ask
anywhere.
You,
we could,
Was Mike
made
the only
angry.
Person...
Made me very angry.
Was Mike the only person with decision-making authority over this venture, or were there other people in charge?
Well, I think there was other people in charge, right? But all the emails I ever got from Mike, Mike's the CEO. Mike's always wanted to be in charge and make all the final decisions. So it didn't matter if someone made those decisions for him in the background, and I believe that's what it was. But Mike's ultimately responsible. That is why I'm coming and talking about Mike. I'm not talking about the company. That non-disclosure agreement I signed was about the company. There's no mention of any of its directors or associates or individuals involved in that company. It's a very basic non-disclosure agreement, very basic. I will upload it so everyone can see it. I know the law. I've looked into it. I've talked to a lawyer here. I'm not stupid. I made sure that I was within my rights. Now, that Mike Swick still owes me $10,000 US. And now, they in that agreement when I sold out, right, they gave me a certain amount, and then they held as tranche payments two $5,000 amounts, one for the end of this year, which was 8 months I had to wait, and the other one is a year after that. So, but I lost all of my shares. I had to give everything up. So this is like you selling the car and you giving the car to someone, but they're holding a piece of that, 10% of that payment of you. What? And that was the agreement. Now, the reason why they wanted to do that, because they didn't want any of these emails getting out. Now, if none of what I'm saying is true, why would they give a shit? They give a shit because they know it's true. And Mike knows that it affects his persona. It affects who he is. And what he is not who he says he is. It's as simple as that. Now,
We have so many callers. I got to get to. There's a caller on Skype.
Well, Bob,
he's been hanging off for 30
minutes. I've also got a restaurant that I'm running here. So how long is it going to take? Do you think we'll be online?
I want to get through these callers very very quickly here. Let's go to the caller on Skype. You've been hanging on for 30 minutes or so. You're on with Bob Carson and Pete Moran. Hello. Hello? All right, we're going to hang up there. Let's go to the next caller here, 832 area code. You're on with Bob Carson and Pete Moran. Hello? Hello, 832 area code. You're on with Bob Carson.
Hello?
Yes.
Hey, first time caller. How's it going?
Who's this?
Oh, this is Mark again.
No.
Okay.
Mark
Houston?
Yeah. You still there?
Okay. Yeah, what's up? Yeah, real quickly here. We got to get through some other callers.
I feel bad the route that Pete's going down, man, to resort to this. It's a shame, and it really does hurt my feelings. I just want him to know that.
Okay, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to our Skype caller who just recalled. Yes, you're on with Bob Carson and Pete Moran. Hello? Goodbye. Okay, let's go to 832 area code here. You're on with Bob Carson and Pete Moran.
Hello?
Hello? Yes, who's this?
Hello, no, this is Sam Hoger. I'm just listening to the show.
Oh, I'm sorry, Sam. You can. Yeah, we'll leave you on hold. No problem. I thought that you were another caller to the show.
No, just listen to me.
Hold on. All right, let's go to 281 area code. You're on with Bob Carson and Pete Moran.
Hi, I just had a quick question for Pete. You say that you're a businessman, but yet you know that going into business is always going to be a risk, and it might not always come out to be best for everybody. And sometimes business doesn't work out on both sides. However, if you feel like you were injustice, do you think that anybody is going to want to go back into business with you, seeing as how you handled the situation? Because I feel like you're just trying to run Mike's name into the dirt, and I really don't understand the purpose of it, because I don't think it's going to make you any contacts or do anything to benefit you.
Yeah, listen, you're absolutely right about business not being something that you can rely on. Sure, that happens. This case is a little different. This is not a business that failed. This is a business that has been built. And I put my blood, sweat, and tears into that business. And it's
Do you feel like Mike
business.
Didn't put his blood, sweat, or tears into the business either?
Of course he did. Yeah, no, we both did. And you can read a lot of articles about me actually saying that. Yeah, no, we all put our blood, sweat, and tears into this business. Absolutely, 100%. But if you get pushed out of that business, now that's not a failed business. That's just being manipulated out of a business. And if you wouldn't be angry about that, well, then that's your prerogative and that's your personal opinion. But
I mean, I understand having issues.
Now,
I just don't understand going to the public like this. I mean, it seems to me like if you're going to be a professional and you're going to do business, then that should be something that you and Mike should be able to work out without you going to the media.
Well, listen, what's your name again, sorry?
My name's Jen.
Yeah, hi, Jen. Listen, I did all that. We tried to do all that. We did it through the lawyers. We did everything. I actually sent both of the business partners an ideal amount that I would have been happy with, which wasn't a lot more than what I did receive, but it was just a little bit more, which would have mean I wasn't in debt when I got to the country, got to my home country, and I would have had enough money to put my son and my wife into a house. That's all I wanted. I didn't want a lot. I didn't want to be a multimillionaire.
But if the papers are already filed and the business is already concluded, then what is the purpose of this radio call? Is it to just make that Mike look bad, or is there something that you're trying to benefit from this entire conversation?
Well, what I would suggest that everybody that doesn't understand, I can upload what those emails were and what the intent of those the contracts were. I had no choice to sign. I had no choice to take the money. If I didn't take the money, put it this way, I'll tell you right now, one of the emails said, if you don't do it, we will go bankrupt and you will get nothing. Now, what does that tell you? I couldn't take nothing because I would have had nothing. It would have been harder for me. So I had no choice but to take the amount that they offered. That was it, in a nutshell. It was a take-it-or-leave-it deal. And, yes, when I took it, I had to sign those documents. That doesn't mean it was right. Listen, Mark Zuckerberg did this to his original business partner. If you've ever seen that movie, it's exactly the same thing. He signed a legal contract saying that he would diminish the shares. And he got screwed over.
So you're comparing your efforts in Thailand to Facebook? You're comparing these two situations?
No, I'm not. I'm comparing the situation. That I'm comparing the situation is irrelevant as far as what is written in a contract. It does not necessarily mean it is right. Right? Just because I signed that contract for the sale of that business.
So once again, you still haven't really answered my question. What are you trying to gain by this?
I'm not trying to gain anything.
Well, Jen, if I could just interject here. One of the reasons why Pete decided to come on the show is because, from my understanding, Pete, you were making posts on the underground. And
made one post.
And what happened with that? You were deleted or you were banned or something like that?
Now look. I put the post up, and that thing lasted about 5 minutes. When I did look at it, it had about 333 views, about 25 comments, and when I went to comment to somebody, it said I was signed out and I couldn't sign back in, and the post is no longer there. So, I mean, I don't know if the underground's obviously, I stepped on a lot of toes.
I just really think that you should rethink your business decisions if you're going to go on radio shows, because it's really going to ruin a lot of contacts for you. I'm just really trying to look out for you.
Because
I really don't think that this is the wisest choice in business matters.
My dear, I don't need the business contacts. I have a business already in my country,
do you?
And it's very successful. Yeah, I'm doing great at it, too. Thanks very much. I'm not worried about my reputation. I don't care. Do you think there's a lot of business people out there that the only people in business in this world have got beautiful consciences and great past records? Because that's a little naive. There's a lot of business.
I mean, it just sounds to me like you're coming across as kind of backpedaling and not being very truthful. That's from what I've gathered from
this
show.
I'm very truthful. What do you think I'm lying about?
I mean, you just keep going back and saying that you didn't get your fair share, but you signed the contract, and you keep saying you were forced into
it.
I don't think that's the case. This doesn't seem logical for me.
Okay, so are you an advocate of people who sign confessions, and then you believe that if they sign that confession, they are indeed guilty? Are you an advocate of that, or do you think?
I mean,
that
I can't say that
100%
of the time, but I would say majority of the time, if somebody confesses to something, then they were probably the one that did it. Majority of the time.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. The majority of the time. So in this case, are you thinking I'm a majority or a minority? Are you not giving me any benefit of the doubt?
Not really, no.
Well, there you go. See, that's your personal opinion. If you like, go onto my Twitter account, send me your email. I'll send you the documents and I'll send you the emails. And then you can be the judge.
I can be the judge?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't need you to judge me. I'm not going to try and convince you. I'll be more than happy to show you those emails where I was told the company will go bankrupt.
And Jen, we're going to have to leave it there.
If you still think I'm wrong, well, then I'm wrong.
Jen, we're going to have to leave it there. We have other callers, but thank you very much for calling, and we really appreciate your questions and your kindness here on the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate it, too. Yeah, well spoken. Thank you.
Okay, let's go to another caller here now on Skype. This is the third time we've tried to connect with this caller. Welcome to Carson's Corner. Hello? Okay. And the only other caller that we have on the line now is from Sam, and he said he was listening to the program. And we want to welcome the Underground listeners,
yeah,
too. We just found out that there was a post on the Underground now letting people know about this show and everything. So naturally,
yeah,
a lot of people are probably calling from the Underground to see this. So, and we have a lot of other questions to ask you here. We've seen other gyms in Thailand, such as the Tiger Muay Thai, and they seem to be doing pretty well, at least from the outside.
Yeah.
Was this a botched endeavor in some respects? I mean, what is it about Thailand which is ostensibly good for opening up new MMA-style gyms? I mean, not to disrespect the country in any way, but my impression is that there are deep social divisions there, haves and have-nots, if you will, and that the average Thai citizen can be pretty poor.
Yes, that's correct. Look the biggest bonus for there's two great reasons to open a gym in Thailand. One is it's a hub for Muay Thai and it's a hub for MMA. A lot of people know about it, so hey, why not open it in the most popular place? The second is cost. While the building and setting up a business is relevant to what it would cost in the States or any other Western country, it's not as cheap as what people think it is. It's still very, very expensive and very difficult at times. But the staffing costs, cheap. You're talking 7,000, 8,000, maybe up to 15,000 baht per instructor. So you're talking about $500 maximum per month. This is for a six-day week, maybe even a seven-day week for staff. Now, I know this because I had businesses there, and I had a ton of staff, and no staff. They're very underpaid. So as far as a business goes, you can run 20 staff, whereas in Australia or America, you could only afford to have five of those staff. Now, when you only have five, your service is not as easy to provide. When you have 20, your service is fantastic. So bottom line is you get more revenue in your pocket. And that's why a lot of people open up the businesses here, because you can make a lot more money. And it's a hub for MMA and it's a hub for Muay Thai. So it's a no-brainer to say, where should we open up a gym? I mean, I'm sure Mike could open up a gym anywhere in the States, but it would have just been another gym open in the States like any other gym. Harder, tougher, less revenue. It wasn't a tough decision to open it in Thailand. I'd been living in Thailand. I've been there for 10 years. So I knew the ins and outs of it. I knew how to work with the Thai people. I know how it all works. So, it made sense to do it.
Is the gym still operating? Has it gone under? What's the status of it? I mean, if it's still operating, I would think that have some ability
operating
to recover. Go ahead.
No, I won't get any more money. I'm out of that gym. That's done and dusted for me.
Okay.
Listen, don't get me wrong. Anyone who's listening, it's a great gym. State of the art. It's brand new. Right? So go there. I'm not trashing the gym. I owned it. I built it. I was there. I built it from the very first, I built it from the very first time we cut the grass on the land. It was nothing. It was jungle. I've been there since that, from putting the first bit of concrete into the ground. I was there, and I built the whole thing with Mike. We built it and watched it grow from the very minute. So, yeah, I'm bitter because I lost out on that. I had 25% of that. I was proud to be an owner of it. But me and Mike just couldn't get along. I couldn't keep up to Mike's expectations of what Mike expected from me. But I was a business partner with him. I wasn't an employee. So what happened. The thing is, what Mike should have done was the right thing. And the right thing would have been to say, look, we're not working out. This is what the gym owes you, because this is what the shares are worth. You own this many shares. Here's your money. Good luck. Or give me half the money. Let me keep some shares until that return on investment is processed, easily done.
All right.
But
let's
what
go
did
to
happen is they got all the shares. Yeah.
We got several more calls that popped up here. All right, we're going to go to a Skype caller now. You're on with Bob Carson, Pete Moran.
Is it me or is it somebody else?
Who is this? It's you.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay, I want to make sure you're hearing me and not the Skype guy. I'm not on Skype.
Okay. You got a 111 area code, so I just assume you're on Skype. But, yeah, you're
I
on
got
the
you. Okay. Okay, I want to say this is one of your best shows in years. Hoger was outstanding. You had some crazy callers. All we need now is a Dan Quinn update, and things will be copacetic. And I appreciate it. Can I stay on the line and listen to the show from
the
phone?
Yeah, I'll let you stay. And we're gonna meet you. But yeah, Dan Quinn called me the other day, and I'm trying to. I wasn't home to answer his phone call, but we should have Dan on the show pretty soon. Let's go to another caller here. You're on with Bob Carson of Pete Moran. Hello? Hello? Okay. Goodbye. Pete, you still there?
Yes.
Okay, great. All right, so basically, you know, you could be out of a lot of money here. How much of a loss
I'm
do you
on,
think?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, Yeah.
All up, I've spent about, I would say, $160,000. That's what I've documented. Okay, that's not all in just that investment in that business, all right? That is living expenses and things like that from being in Thailand. But the fact is, I wouldn't have been in Thailand. I went to help Mike, and that's how I got into the debt that I got into, you know? I know how business works. You know, people can sit there and judge and say, oh, yeah, but this and that and the other. Yeah, it's all semantics. It really is. The bottom line is I helped Mike get Mike's dream. That is the bottom line. Without me, he would not have had that gym right now. He may have had it, undoubtedly, but certainly not now. I was 100% instrumental in getting that gym. He just had to do the right thing. He had to be the person I believed in the very beginning, and he wasn't. He was. He turned into a different person. He turned into a businessman that says, "Hey, let's just, we've got to step on and burn people on the way up." That's not me. If that's how you want to be in business, well, that's his prerogative. But it wasn't a lot more they had to pay me, but they chose not to. They chose to save a few dollars. And that's the bottom line. Yeah, save a few dollars, stick it in their pockets, and then sink it into the gym. They told me a lot. Look, at one stage I had no money. I wasn't being paid enough. I asked if I could get a pay rise. They said, no, we don't have the money and we can't justify it. That's fair enough. That's business. A week later, the company buys a brand new truck. Now, this truck was a $30,000 vehicle. And I'm like, okay, so we're going to justify paying me $300 a month extra. That's all I was asking for, $75 a week, but we can afford to buy a new truck. We didn't need a new truck. So it was these sorts of things that I kept looking at and going, well, I can see what's happening. I can see who's caring about who. And I was a shareholder, and I'd already put in my money. So, you know, I know Mark's upset, and he said I'd only put in $27,000, but I didn't put in that much. I put in a lot more than that. Mike knows how much I put in, and you know, that's why the reason why I'm doing this, I'm not doing this for any monetary point or anything. I'm doing it because I want to do it. I'm doing it because if I don't voice my opinion, this will drive me nuts for the rest of my life, and I don't want to go nuts. I'm going to just put it out there and tell people that, you know, everyone's not exactly who they say they are.
Have you explored any sort of legal recourse here? Have you tried to use the court system either in Thailand or somewhere else, or, you know, try to recover the money that you invested?
Well, I recovered half that money. But no, I haven't gotten out of the legal path yet. Thailand, very, very difficult to do that in Thailand. It's, the society that Thailand is, you know, it's very expensive to go through the courts. That's why a lot of people have businesses there, because you can't sue someone in Thailand. It's not like the States where it's or my country where it's quite litigious, and I could go to a lawyer and say, hey, I think I've been done wrongly, and that lawyer's he wants to do the case pro bono because he knows he can get a result. First of all, lawyers in Thailand can't do pro bono work. It's illegal. So for me to do a court case, I have to have a lot of money to do that. And because it's a Westerner against a Westerner, i.e. me against Mike, they just run it through the courts, takes forever. It'll cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so it just doesn't make any sense. I have no choice but to do what I'm doing right now. That's my choice. If I could do it legally, well, hell yeah, I'd do it legally. But one thing I will do is I'm not breaking my NDA, my non-disclosure agreement. I'm not breaking that because I'm not doing it against the company. This is about Mike. So, yeah, I'll probably sue them when they don't pay me the other $10,000.
You know, I'm trying to get a sense of why you ended up...
I'm
trying to get a sense of why you ended up posting these things on the forum, because even though that's definitely something which happens in the MMA community, it really feels like you're at the mercy of public opinion and the forum and the moderators.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean,
I
said at the start of the interview,
sure,
the fact that your posts were deleted makes me wonder if now fighters themselves are the only people allowed to use the forum and try to recover money. I think if Schwick were the one accusing someone else, the posts would have been allowed to stay, just my opinion. And I understand the UGC owner.
Absolutely.
Well, see, Kurek is trying to clean up the forum, and there's an argument to be made for that, but I don't think that just deleting every contentious post is really a solution.
If someone posted something about Vitor Belfort using steroids, it would stay, and everyone would discuss it. Not a problem, right? They pick and choose what they want to leave up there. Oh, let's all attack Vitor Belfort. Even though this guy, Vitor Belfort, everyone knows who he is. He's a superstar, but people can still say he's a steroid user. Now, I say Mike Swick's a steroid user, everybody freaks out. But Mike Swick was on Anavar, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Anavar is a steroid. And I don't think if you were using Anavar and you went to fight that you would pass the medical. Simple as that. Now, Mike can tell people he's been using coconut water, but you don't put on 20 kilos of muscle or whatever it did by using coconut water. That's Anavar, my friend. You know? And those messages I posted on my on my Twitter, they're WhatsApp messages. I can't edit them. Now, Mark and Mike can say I edited them, sure. But then someone show me how I can upload all of my emails directly from Gmail to a storage site where everyone can access it, and I'll do it. I don't give a shit. I've got nothing to hide. I want everyone to see the real truth, and then maybe everyone will say, well, maybe I did get fucked over. Oh, excuse my French, Bob.
That's okay. This is a free form here. And, you know, with regards to the steroids, some of the posts, whatnot, from my understanding, basically have you admitting to buying steroids, because I would say that if you willingly bought steroids for someone posting that, you did so really kind of makes both of you guys look bad rather than Swick alone. Did you have any moral issues or fear of legal reprisals when you were doing this stuff?
No, well... You know, we're in a country where anything's accessible in Thailand, and Thailand's renowned for it. And look, we did things, both of us, all of us, we did things there that you certainly would never contemplate doing in our own countries.
But why did Swick buy his own steroids then? I mean, was there any state of reason why
you
couldn't do that? Yeah.
Well, he did. He used to buy his own from the pharmacy, but... he used to get most of his own. I didn't buy many of those for him. If I was going past the same pharmacy, I'd get them. The HGH is what I used to buy because I was getting it from overseas. But, again, we didn't know what was in that. We didn't know what was in those vials. That's just like, get it. You know, we're both injecting that. What is that?
And just to
what
be clear,
what was in that?
Schwick had a lot of health problems and some injuries like many fighters, and I guess I would be more understanding of someone who just wanted to use them, you know, to get well rather than to get ahead in the ring like so many other fighters, you know, like Chael Sonnen and Vitor Belfort.
Yeah.
Well, listen.
Why does anyone use it? I don't know why anyone uses what they use, you know. For me, I was 50 years old. Want to feel better. Want to be stronger. That's it. Simple as that in a nutshell. If I could do it legally here and it was cost effective, sure. Why not? Why grow old and feel weak?
We've got 60 seconds left. We're just about out of time.
I appreciate all your time, man.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you, handling the callers and answer the questions. We still have a lot more material. Maybe perhaps we'll have you on sometime down the road if you're interested.
Sure. No problem. We'll do it
That'll
on a Monday
great.
Or a Tuesday if that was ever possible because I work the rest of the time.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Pete, for joining us on the program.
Thanks, Bob, and thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. Appreciate
it. Take care, my friend. All right, and I want to thank Sam Hoger, who was absolutely amazing in his interview. You know, the last time we had Sam on, it was a highly rated show, and I anticipate this will be as well. Thank you so much, Sam. We hope to speak to you sometime down the road. My name is Bob Carson. Make sure to friend me on Facebook.com/Bob Carson MMA. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.